What happens to all that uneaten food from the buffets on cruise ships? This is the focus group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Welcome to the Focus Group. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is our website. You can learn about us there. Also, our Tuesday podcast called TFG Unbuttoned and our partner in crime. Well, maybe not in crime, but that would be Deep Discount. We're going to be visiting with them a little later in the broadcast. Mr. Bennett, welcome to the week.
What are the chances you and I would have some sort of a matching ensemble on today?
They're low because we don't usually coordinate this, but we're both wearing red, right?
Yeah, which we usually are in blue or black or green. But the fact that I've got some sort of flannel check on and yours complements it perfectly, like they kind of go together.
And you can tell that I'm in the second floor of our house upstate. It's sun's out, so everything's bright, 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 bright.
Well, because you got the snow. How much snow did you get?
We got 6 to 8 inches. Hard to tell because it's that, you know, if you and I were out west skiing, oh, what a beautiful coat you have on. Oh, it's an adorable coat. What was the line?
Pretty.
I said?
No, it's a pretty coat. That coat's pretty, pretty. John, that wasn't the look I was going for. Remember, everybody was laughing.
I can't believe
that's
I said
a pretty color. And what it was an odd color. I forget the color.
I think it was like some fluorescent color. If we were out west, this would be a heaven. It's powder. I went out to shovel this morning and it was the easiest stuff in the world to get rid of because it just, you know, easy peasy. I remember that was the day we had a private lesson with a guy. It was just the two of us and we had this great instructor and you asked him about snowboarding and he goes, yeah, I'm snowboarding right now. I got one on each foot. It was his alpine skiing thing, right?
Yeah. I miss the old days of skiing. I can't ski anymore with my knees.
Bob would love to go skiing again. He thinks about it a lot. He'd like
Bob's a good skier.
Yeah. He's a very good skier. Yeah. And he learned out here on the East Coast. So on the West Coast, he's a king, right? Because
he could have headed out to the Aspen Gay Ski Week's going on right now.
Really?
That old chestnut. Still
going. I learned to ski at Aspen Gay Ski Week many, many, many moons ago. Yeah. So
yeah, I was looking to see.
I had two women in my class, Mimi, and I think I always tell the story around the chairlift. When, are you here for the week? Are you here for the week? They were from New Orleans. And finally, they're like, are you here for the gay ski week? I'm like, yeah, how'd you know? Oh, it's as plain as a freshly clean pane of glass. I didn't think I was that obvious, but apparently I was, right?
Well, you know, as you know, it's quite the week out there in Aspen when it goes on. And there was a college friend of mine who was a bit of a trumper. And took the whole family out for their, you know, once in a lifetime getaway to Aspen, and it was Gay Ski Week, and I loved every second of it. And a bunch of us we just rode him and said, "Oh, did you pick this week on purpose?" Oh, it drove him crazy because you know there's drag queens going to people in thongs, you know the whole deal. Women are topless. Shit, well, what if we can get a flight? Yeah, head out to Gay Ski Week.
It's expensive out there, and when we went, we stayed at a place called the Hunter Creek Condos, and a bunch of us dressed up as, but this is back when the Robert Palmer girls, remember the Robert Palmer?
Oh, yeah, Addicted to Love.
Yeah, and we had these, like, blunt cut, or the China cut wigs, they were white, and we had these whole outfits, and went to this bar dressed up like that, back then, of course, my friends were like, you know, drag is good for like 5 minutes. Walk in, make a scene, get out, go change.
Was that Trish that you went with her? Who'd you get with?
Oh, no, that was our friends Craig and Bruce. A whole bunch of guys went out, and it was a lot of fun.
Back in the Pines days?
It was some of our friends from the Pines days, yeah. Wow. Hey, I was going to mention to you that Bob and I noticed that, I was going to save this for Deep Discount later, but it's well worth mentioning now. You know, Team America, one of Tim's and my favorite movies, has been reissued as a 4K HD special edition. There's all this special content in it. And we actually went and found some of the content on YouTube because it's stuff that they've used in previous DVD releases, like the making of.
Right.
And we watched the making of the puppet sets, like the Panama Canal, Paris, you know, the Team America headquarters is behind Mount Rushmore. Oh, and of course, Pyongyang, which would be the, you know, where the Kim Jong-il had the thing. So that prompted us to pop the Blu-ray in, the Blu-ray of Team America. So we start watching Team America. It flew by. We were practically crying. We were laughing so hard. There were things that we didn't even notice. We've seen the movie, I don't know how many times, but we pick up things again and again. And I got to tell you, Tim, they could have made that movie today.
Yeah.
Because what's changed, right?
Nothing. Nothing other than it's Kim Jong-un instead of Kim Jong-il.
Yeah.
No, and there was a whole behind the scenes too about how they were going to make the glasses for Kim Jong-un.
The big
huge glasses. And they had all these different styles they were going to use, but they landed on the ones that they were like women's glasses, they said.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wore those platform shoes, but no, it's I saw on deep discount it was available. It was going to be a pick, but I figured we've talked about it enough, I'm sure.
I don't think you could talk about it enough. I think that there are the theme song, like, and we were watching the beginning again when they bonjour, we're here to help, and the croissant street and little child Frere Jacques bumps into the terrorist. It's a brilliantly done movie, very funny.
I can't believe I've got a Chechen here telling me when he's going to take a delivery.
Of weapons of mass destruction.
I can't believe we've got a Chechen here telling me what he's going to.
You cannot deny the brilliance of FAG. What was that? Film Actors Guild. And you had Alec Baldwin. You had like Tim Robinson. And then every time we'd go to Matt Damon. Matt Damon.
What was Madonna's first husband? Sean somebody? What the hell was his name?
Oh, Sean Penn.
Sean Penn. Yeah. And then Kim Jong-un.
Hello. Here at the Film Actors Guild, we have a new friend who's going to sponsor us. And the TV, the big screen comes on. There's the puppet with the big glasses. Hero. Did you know that they made the little model set of Pyongyang is made out of all the little buildings or Chinese delivery boxes?
No. So you have to go back and look at that.
If you pick up like this new DVD, I think it's 4K Ultra HD release with all this extras, they'll talk about the making of the props. But when we learned that they used, you know, Chinese, you know, those little containers, the delivery containers as most of Pyongyang. And then they were showing how they made the Paris set. And the further back they go from the camera, they can change. They did forced perspective. So they said, here's a marionette. And they had this marionette. And then they said, like 10 feet back or 8 feet back, we put in action figures that are like 12 inches high, you know, like, and like, cause no one's going to notice. And then,
right.
And then my favorite line in that was, this is, we figured this would be, we would show the world the way Americans think the world is. Like in Paris, the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, they're all the same space.
Yeah.
And when they showed Egypt, it was the pyramids, the Sphinx, all, everything's in the same space.
Yeah. It's all not, played. You know, yeah. That's America. That's what we think. Everything's together like Disney World. It's all one, boom, boom, boom. Like, just walk from one way neighborhood to the next.
Epcot. Yeah, let's go to China. Let's go to England. Yeah. Anyway, that's just an aside that we had. It's like when we pop Grey Gardens in sometimes. It's that kind of thing. So
you always pick up something new. Yeah.
Always, always. And hey.
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
I thought this was a joke until I saw it advertised in many places. The headline is Progresso launches limited edition soup flavored hard candy. Yuck. Sounds nasty as hell, doesn't it?
Unless it's when you're sick. That's the only thing I could think of, right?
That's the only thing I could think of. But so Progresso soups, which I love. There's a number of them. I like the Chicorina is one of my favorites. But Progresso Soups has stirred up a super strange confection to honor National Soup Month. So January is National Soup Month. So through the end of January, they're selling soup you can suck on. And that's how they're advertising it. Soup you can suck on. So there's chicken noodle flavored hard candies that General Mills has developed. And they released them last Thursday. So the soup drops resemble cough drops or bouillon cubes. And they said they're coming right at the perfect height of cold and flu season. And it's a taste like you've never expected, a company spokesperson said of the new soup drops. When you're sick, there's nothing truly more reassuring than some chicken noodle soup. So they thought, why not, or, you know, why stop at the soup ball, and decided to put together these hard candies. So for $2.49, which is about the cost of a can of soup if it's on sale. Plus shipping, you get 20 drops in a tin. So it's a like the soup tin that you remember with the blue, mm-hmm. the blue soup tin. And it comes with a can of the real stuff too. So quite a bargain. So you get 20 of these chicken noodle flavored soup drops, hard candies, plus a can of the soup. And they're packed full of flavor. They said, of course, it has the flavors of veggies, chicken, soft egg noodles, and a hint of parsley. People think it's crazy. A lot of people made the ugh or used the yuck emoji. They sold out within hours of the launch. The first batch, they were shocked about the success. However, if you go to progressosoupdrops.com, P-R-O-G-R-E-S-S-O, soupdrops.com, every Thursday at 9 a.m., they'll be releasing new batches of the Soup Drop hard candies for this promotion, so you can order them online and get them sent through the end of January.
Where did you find this?
It was at a Food and Wine magazine article, and I thought it was a joke, and then I Googled it, and it popped up on everything from the New York Post to Forbes and Fortune and NBC and CNN, so it's been all over.
Mm.
And
as you went through it, I think it's a great gimmick. I think it's a wonderful way of getting you interested in Progresso soups. I don't think they're going to give Ricola a run for their money. No. I go to Costco, I get the Ricola sugar-free lemon drop, you know, this throat lozenge yeah. bag, like for a doctor's office. There's hundreds of them in there. I would still like to try this, though.
Well, I was going to ask you, would you try them?
Yeah, I would. I would definitely try it. And you said every Thursday.
I'll try to order them and see. You know, I'll try to order them and see if we can get them. But they sold out quick. I don't know.
Yeah, you do know. You just basically, you're all like, well...
Yeah.
Well, mine's a food-based one as well, and I teased it at the beginning of the show, and it's basically this idea of what happens on cruise ships with the food that they put out that it's in the buffets, and they don't get eaten, because there's all these rules and regulations about cooked food. Like, if you put right. food out, you can't take it back. So the article says here, cruise ships like the Royal Caribbean's Icon of the Sea, a behemoth that can host nearly 10,000 guests. Now, count me out of that right off the bat. I don't think a vacation with 10,000 people on a floating boat is my idea of a fun time. But they produce an absurd amount of food every day, from 4,000 lobster tails to 40,000 desserts. And while cruise ship goers are known to throw back an impressive amount of buffet food, and I've seen that firsthand, turns out their eyes are still bigger than their stomachs, leaving a massive and alarming amount of food wasted on board. To tackle this issue, cruise lines have come up with pretty creative strategies to cut down on waste. Buffet dishes are carefully measured before being served, because again, if it goes out, it can't come back. The waste that does remain, it doesn't just get tossed. It goes on an adventure of its own. Now, this is specific to some of these new ships. It goes on an adventure of its own through food pulpers, down pipes, and into a system known as microwave-assisted pyrolysis. I don't know what this means. This process dries up the food scraps, turning them into hamster food-looking pellets that the ship can use as fuel. This was
fuel?
So somehow the food is turned into like fuel pellets.
Oh my gosh.
As of early 2024, this energy could power small sections of the vessel, like the water park. But at just 200 kilowatts, it's a drop in the bucket for ships that need tens of thousands of kilowatts a day to run. It's a promising idea, but I'm making a small dent in this food thing here. So Royal Caribbean reported generating over 53,655 cubic meters of food waste per year. To put that in perspective, that's enough to fill 14 Olympic swimming pools with compressed scraps. Wow. Okay. So
how many swimming pools?
14 Olympic size swimming pools with compressed scraps, food scraps.
Wow.
So apparently they're still working very hard to reduce food waste. But again, it's this whole thing about when you prep food, when you touch it, when you bake it, when you heat it, it has to be consumed in a certain amount of time or it's garbage. And now they're turning it into pellets to fuel some of the smaller electric stuff on board. I like the idea. But I think if you attack it from the other end, and I don't know, it's maybe buffets aren't such a great idea, right?
Unless it's the Mary Kay cruise and there's no food left, right?
No. That's, you and I heard about the Weight Watchers cruise.
Oh, Weight Watchers cruise, there's no food left.
They had to turn around and come back to port because they ran out of provisions. Now, that's on a Weight Watchers cruise. And the guy that told us was Jonathan Norton. And he was,
how do you remember
head,
all their names? Yeah, he was the, I don't head, know. From Dover, the White Cliffs of Dover or something.
The Isle of Man. The Isle of, he was from the Isle of Man. And I think you might remember him because you commented on this, as he had very long nasal hair.
Yeah, I didn't care.
Hair sticking out.
Not you recommended neat. Some book to me about Soviet something or other, and I remember getting it. It was like 2,000 pages. I found it at a used bookstore, and it was microtype.
Did you really get it?
Oh, I did. Because it was fascinated by the book. It was about kind of the build-up to the fall of the Soviet Union. He was telling me about how fascinating it was. And I said, oh, I would love to read that. And he just said, oh, it gives you all like the inside story. So I go and get this thing, John. It was about, 6 inches thick.
He must have read that on the crossing, right? Because he would talk about
it. It went right back to
Tim and I did a cruise years ago. It was a Subaru Shakedown thing. And this particular boat we were on, at the end of the season in the Caribbean, it sails to England, I think, across the Atlantic. And it's the crossing, they call it. And a couple of passengers book the crossing. But apparently it's a very stoic kind of stay in your cabin or read in the library kind of thing. Maybe he read that on the crossing, right?
I don't know what he did. I thought you were going to say they just toss the food out into the water for the fish.
No, they have to. They can't even do that. They have to bring it back to port.
Don't you think that would be good?
No.
I bet what would happen is you would have all these birds following the cruise ships, knowing that there's going to be food coming. That'd
now,
be a real
there's
shit show.
A smart. There's Which a smart be, observation. You're right about that.
But I don't. I thought you were going to say they either grind it up with like a trash compactor and then just toss it into the ocean. I mean, we throw everything else in the ocean. Why not food?
There you go. That's Mr. Bennett.
Don't you think?
I agree. Instead, they make it into pellets and they burn. All right, folks. As many of you know, and I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Deep Discount is a partner of ours here on the Focus Group. We're pleased to have them with us here in 2025. They've been with the show for a long time, at least since 2016, Tim? 2017, maybe?
Yes.
And we would love it if you visit their site by going to ours, focusgroupradio.com, and click on the Deep Discount logo, which is a shark. Arr, sharky. And you could start your shopping extravaganza. There's always something to find, and this is just 100% true at Deep Discount. No matter what mood you're in, you're going to find something. So, Mr. Bennett, we have this week a 4K Ultra HD sale, and 4K Ultra HD is a level above Blu-ray. It's even sharper than Blu-ray.
Sharper.
So if you have the proper equipment, meaning the player and the TV, I think you could guarantee it's a cinematic experience. It looks beautiful. So they have a lot of discs on sale. What did you pick?
So I might have mentioned this one before, but I saw it when I was perusing the sale there. And it's Atomic Blonde. Did you ever see this?
I think you mentioned this movie. You liked it. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a soundtrack you love.
Yes. Well, it's about an MI6 agent, which is similar to like our CIA or our secret security forces that we have. And the actress plays that she gets sent to Berlin. It's Charlize Theron. And she gets sent to Berlin as part of the spy mission for the UK and Cold War Germany, East and West Germany. And so what I loved about it, too, is that it was very quick. So it was a very fast action. I watched it with Brian and Rich at their house, and they made me watch it. And it was fast action.
They made me watch.
Well, because, I'm not a huge fan of this sort of genre. But it kept moving. It kept moving. And she was, one of these intelligence officers undercover and spy. And so there was lots of, in many ways, things that you would just be like, they shot at her 900 times and missed every time sort of thing. But, lots of shooting up and banging up, but had the most fantastic, you're right, soundtrack of any movie. So when they said this was on 4K, I thought I would certainly recommend it and give it a go. It's just for some of the songs you would know you'll recognize. Cat People by David Bowie, Major Tom, Blue Monday, 99 Luftballons, Father Figure, Der Kommissar. Oh. Cities in Dust by Susie and the Banshees. The Politics of Dancing, the Reflex. These are all 80s Cold War hits. Iran, Perfect. Flock of Seagulls, Voices Carry Till Tuesday, London Calling the Clash, among many others. So
every soundtrack, song you said, I started hearing it in my head. Yeah.
Yeah. So the soundtrack to this Shoot 'em Up, you know, kind of new wave 80s soundtrack is, I thought was just a brilliant, brilliant use of music for the movie. So Atomic Blonde available at deep discount in 4K Ultra HD. And,
for worth, an amazing $17.64 for a really high res disc. That's not yep. bad. That's a great price.
Yep.
There might be some moans and groans from the audience listening as I click to this and say, I had to do it. I saw it pop up. And it, I'll tell you why. So I picked Star Trek the Motion Picture, and not just the this. There was several versions of the movie you can get at deep discount. There's the theatrical release. And then there's this. This is the director's cut of Star Trek the Motion Picture. It came out about a year and a half ago. It's available for $21.74 on 4K Ultra HD. And what they did was the editor of the film, the original editor, knew the director, Bob Wise. And Robert Wise is best known for directing The Day the Earth Stood Still and a couple of classic science fiction movies. I think he did the Andromeda the experiment. So he was never quite happy with the film. It was literally rushed to the theaters. There's stories about how the prints were literally practically wet when they were projected at the premiere because they were so far behind schedule making Star Trek the Motion Picture. So Bob Wise had to make some concessions in the editing process. And so his editor convinced Paramount Studios to go back and reissue the movie. They redid some of the special effects and they did some tweaking of the edits. And they re-released Star Trek the Motion Picture, the director's cut. I have a soft spot in my heart for this. When I was a kid, I remember laying on the floor near Christmas and the paper was spread out and they had a double page ad. And I was dying to see this movie. And finally, my mom's like, Steven, just take him. And it was Christmas Day. And we get to the theater late, but I sat like two rows from the front. So I was like, you know, your head goes back, you're watching the movie. And I loved it, but it's definitely one that puts people to sleep. Bob will watch it. It's like, oh, you're watching this. So I tend to watch it every Christmas in memory of that childhood thing. But my recommendation
originally came out in 1979.
Yeah, exactly. 70. Yeah.
I was trying to look at there.
2 years after Star Wars, or 3 years, it was 77.
But for most people, you don't think would be a fan if even if they were a big fan of the series.
Most people are not a fan of this movie, but the second one, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is now just, I think it's been entered into the Library of Congress or the American Film Institute. Yeah, that is considered the best Star Trek movie ever made. I still love this one, though, because after years of being off TV, they come back and they have the new Enterprise. Anyway, sorry for being a nerd. And it was the Andromeda Strain that Bob Wise directed as well. So we have a new release this week, and this is a movie that I've heard from at least five people that I've got to see. It stars Demi Moore, and you might have heard of it. It's called The Substance. Demi Moore was the 2025 Golden Globe Best Actress Award she got for this. And basically, she plays a former A-lister, past her prime, and suddenly fired from her fitness show by repellent studio head Harvey, which is played by Dennis Quaid. She's then drawn to the opportunity presented by a mysterious new drug, the substance. All it takes is one injection and she is reborn temporarily as the gorgeous something 20-something Sue. I heard from a lot of people that this is just a really good movie. So I highly recommend it. It's on 4K Ultra HD for $23.99. So it's
I'll have
substance.
To get that shot. Was it a shot she took, I wonder?
One shot, yeah.
It's like a Zempic or something.
Yeah, it does something to, well, I want to say it's probably a horror element here. Like, who knows what happens if the shot wears off, but there you go.
So head over to focusgroupradio.com, click on the deep discount logo to own your passion, start shopping away. I picked this week a movie which I think even has a better soundtrack called Atomic Blonde. John picked Star Trek, the Motion Picture. And the new release is The Substance. I thought for sure you were going to pick Team America, which is also available.
I snuck him in by talking about it. Yeah. We snuck him in, right.
So as a bonus, be sure to get Team America as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a business birthday and our shop talk. So stay with us.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Welcome back to The Focus Group. John Nash with Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is the URL for our site. You can learn about us, our companion podcast, TFG Unbuttoned, and of course our partners, and on The Focus Group, that would be Deep Discount, who we just visited with in our previous segment. Mr. Bennett has for us what I am most curious about today, a business birthday.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but The Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
John, before I do the business birthday, I was wondering if you and I should do the TikTok and put the business birthday on the TikTok since we don't have TikTok. Now that it's back, what do you think?
I think we should.
We'll have to ask the listener. The business birthday today is
this
a guy.
This is a weird one. I'm curious.
Did you look him up at all?
No, I'm going to let you tell me. But when I got the pictures, I'm like, boy, this goes way back.
Yeah, so there were a number of things. There were a number of other people, but we'd covered them before because we've been doing it for 16 years. So, you know, we bound to fall on the same day. So I really dug deep into the archives for business birthdays and came up with Timothy Dexter, born January 22nd, 1747.
The photo for him is a engraving from 18 or 17-something, right?
Nobody had a camera then, John. I don't think there were cameras, were there? Yeah. Maybe if you were very wealthy. Or you had somebody, paint a portrait. He died in 1806 at 59, which I'm imagining is probably quite old for that time period. Although Franklin and some of those people lived
quite
a long time. He was self-styled himself. He called himself Lord Timothy Dexter. He was an American businessman noted for his eccentric behavior in his writings. And there's the subhead of him is he turned ridiculous ventures into riches. And so he became wealthy through marriage and through a series of improbable successful investments. He was able to spend his fortune lavishly. He was barely educated or literate. They said he considered himself the greatest philosopher known on earth and told people so. He authored a book called A Pickle for the Knowing Ones. Which,
boy, you really came up with a good one today, I tell you.
Which would espouse his views on various topics and became notorious for its unusual spellings and grammatical errors. So he wrote this book, and it had no punctuation in it. And they had a passage of it, which I'm not going to read, but they had a passage, so it had zero punctuation in it, and it was so poorly written.
You just keep reading.
Reading. And so people they bought it because it was so crazy, but there were some little pieces in there if you could get through it. And spacing of words wrong, hyphenated words wrong, he was illiterate. So there were so many complaints about it that he ended up, the book went to be published again, and he added 2 pages of just punctuation. So just full pages of commas, question marks, apostrophes.
Was that the early version of cut and paste? You're supposed to put it
where
you wanted?
So people to put them where they wanted. Yeah, and had gone to print 8 times. It was so successful. It was such a ruse. So it backfired on. People made so much fun of this book, but he made a ton of money on this book. So he dropped out of schooling, they said, when he was 8 and became a farm laborer. And at 16, he met a woman in Massachusetts in Newburyport. And she was quite wealthy. She was 32. He was 16. Her name was Elizabeth Frothingham. She was a rich widow. And so he ends up marrying her. And he set up shop in the basement of this mansion that she had, and he started selling moose hide trousers, gloves and hides, and whale rubber. And she opened up a little shop with notions and so forth. So at the end of and he never really had a job, could never really try to make ends meet or figure things out, but she had money, so they, you know, kept afloat. But at the end of the Revolutionary War, he purchased all of this depreciated continental currency, which was worth nothing. So he bought all this old money, but it ended up on a whim. The U.S. government decided that it would give some value of a percent of the face value of this money. So all this money he purchased did end up being quite a windfall. So he ended up getting money from the U.S. government for having all of this continental currency. And so it made him, they said, he amassed quite a considerable profit. And so he built two ships, and he used the money. He's going to start doing an import-export business to the West Indies and to Europe. So the first thing he decided to do is he started writing to all these newspapers about how smart he was. And so the Newburyport government, he was such a pain in the ass that the government just said, let's give him a title to shut him down. So he was known as Informer of the Deer, D-E-E-R. Of course, there were no deer in Newburyport, but they just felt he was supposed to let people know when he saw deer. And this was his title. So anyway, he decided to, he'd come across a bunch of bed warmers, you know, those things you put under the bed?
Yep.
And used to heat beds in cold New England winters. And somebody said to him, you know, you should take your ships and send these down to the West Indies, which is a tropical area.
Which don't need bed warmers.
And sell these bed warmers. So people were trying to deliberately bankrupt him. So this was a ploy to bankrupt him. Dumb luck. On his way down, they stopped somewhere on the way to the West Indies and sold all of these paddles to someone in the molasses industry. And they used them as ladles and paddles. So he made all this money and profit off of these bed warmers. They said next he went to go sell wool mittens out in Fiji. They were going to sell wool mittens. Somebody convinced him to do that. He ends up running into a merchant that took them all and sent them to Siberia. Made money there. So then somebody jokingly said, they kept trying to bankrupt this guy. Somebody jokingly said, well, why don't you ship coal to Newcastle, which in England, you know, is a huge coal mining area. Timing was perfect. By the time all his coal got there, there was a huge strike in Newcastle, a miner strike, and he was able to sell all his coal at a premium. They said on another occasion, he shipped more gloves to the South China Sea Islands, and by the time the gloves arrived, a bunch of Portuguese merchants bought them and ended up selling them to China. He also exported Bibles to the East Indies and cats. He'd pick up stray cats and sent them to the Caribbean. And everybody laughed at him. However, a bunch of Eastern missionaries were delighted to get the Bibles. They bought all the Bibles up, and the Caribbean nation welcomed all this cats that he brought on the ship. He had a whole shipload of cats because they had a huge rat infestation. So he made all kinds of money selling these cats and the Bibles. He also hoarded whale bones by mistake, which he ended up selling those as corset stays. And they said he just went on as being the subject of ridicule. But he understood, he said, from all this that the value of cornering the market on goods that others did not see as valuable and the utility of, quote, acting the fool. So,
yeah, but then, Tim, isn't Mother Luck like his best business partner?
Yeah. I mean, he was lucky, right? I mean, you talk about that's why it said he had the, you know, this ridiculous ability to turn, you know, ventures into riches.
Friends had the ear like, hey, why don't you sell mittens?
Sell these mittens to the South China Sea. Fiji.
In Fiji.
Okay. Okay. Or sell coal to the, you know, new. Anyway, my favorite thing is he hated his wife as they got older. And so when people would try to see his wife, even though she was wandering around selling notions, he told everybody he was a ghost, that she had died. Said she had died. She wasn't available. So I just saw her the other day. That's her ghost. So what he ended up doing is he then said that he had died. So he sent out a notice that he died. He's going to have a funeral. And so 3,000 people showed up to this mock funeral. Everybody thought he had died. They had the casket, the whole deal set up. And then he was hiding out and watching who showed up and who came to the funeral and how people behaved. So can you imagine 3,000 people showed up? And he was particularly disappointed by the fact that his wife did not cry and she was not upset. So he immediately divorced her and left her, took all her money. She didn't sufficiently grieve, they said. She did not sufficiently grieve his death.
His passing.
Right. She showed up, but she didn't cry. He watched. She wasn't all that upset that he was gone. And so he ended up, he responded to her by going home and he said immediately canned her. And yeah, so that's Timothy Dexter, quite the dandy.
Lord Dexter.
Lord Dexter made himself Lord Dexter, self-proclaimed Tim. Lord.
Congrats on a brilliant historical business birthday. If the guy had stepped into a bucket and walked the rest of his life with a bucket on his foot, he still would have like made out like a bandit. Gloves? bed warmers, coal, and cats.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sold all this stuff, right?
Made money. Unbelievable. Then he made coin.
And the book, he authored the book, A Pickle for the Knowing Ones.
With no punctuation.
Yeah. They said he complained a lot about politicians and clergy and his wife in the book. It contained 8,847 words without any punctuation. No capitalization, no spelling. Correction. Nothing was corrected.
Oh, my God. How could you get through it?
He said one, the first sentence was, I'm the first Lord in the United, United States of America. He spelled America wrong. Voice, V-O-I-S-E, people spelled wrong. And big H had help. I mean, it was, I should try to find this, see if this book's available. They said it's in the Smithsonian, the book.
It should be. This has got to be the craziest thing. That book, the book alone, you just stop at the book. 8,000 words, no punctuation, misspellings, and no capitalization. I mean,
it's going to be your Christmas gift next year. I'm going to get you
I think you've earmarked something there. Yeah. All right. We do have a shop talk. Yeah. Will I remember that you gave this to me already? Yeah. Okay. We have a shop talk for you folks, and comes to us from Inc. magazine, and the topic is, the scientists tracked 1,000 kids for 40 years, which is a huge study, and out of all that data, this was the number one predictor of financial success that they came across. So here's, before we tell you what that is, hard to imagine a study lasting that long, but scientists began recording the lives of more than 1,000 kids from the New Zealand town of Dunedin since 1972. They've written papers, they've looked at the data. It's an analysis of the Dunedin data have found that so if you look at the pool of children they were looking at that all aged in these 1,000 kids, most troublemakers grow out of juvenile delinquency. Mental health problems are far more common than previously believed. And early puberty is particularly stressful for young girls, and I don't doubt that. It's a grab bag of fascinating results, but which is the most useful for entrepreneur parents hoping to give their kids the best shot at a good life? Well, it turns out that this comprehensive study, 40 years, 1,000 kids, found that emotional intelligence is the best predictor for later in life success. And to clarify, emotional intelligence is not necessarily a trait, but it is a skill that can be learned. I actually like this article a lot because I thought they did a good job of delving into, you know, how that actually comes into play. You and I will discuss this, but there is something about the end of this article I wanted to talk about with you about how to achieve these things. But I look at I look at people who are successful, emotional intelligence is not IQ. EQ is what they call it. It's the ability to read others, the ability to react a certain way, to not be driven completely by your emotions or by an emotional state of mind, and to make decisions. And they said in this article that by the time these kids were in their 30s, if they had in fact developed emotional intelligence, and they were good at, and they were using it properly, or that they were functioning adults, they were going to be successful for the rest of their life, at least in terms of financial decisions, et cetera. What'd you think of this, Tim?
I like this article. I was glad you had found it. I started thinking about myself, and I'm sure you probably did as well, because they said there's a way to cultivate. So different than IQ, as you mentioned, where some people are smart and some just inherently, right? But with this emotional intelligence, they said you could cultivate it. And they said there's plenty of advice out there on how parents can support the development of a kid's EQ. Tips include helping your child talk through their emotions and empathizing with them, modeling curiosity and humility, and even exposing them to art and literature as a way to think through complexities of being human. This is not a ding on my parents. I don't think I had any of that. Maybe I did.
Okay, so you did exactly what I did. And now I'm going to introduce, I think your parents did a fantastic job with EQ, because when we were growing up, we got out of the house with a band of kids and we played all day, then came home for dinner. And I've read other literature about child rearing in the 60s and 70s that looks at the, and they would, those same scientists who talk about this would tell you that what we experienced, problem solving minus an adult with a group of kids, right, was also fostering emotional intelligence.
That's a good point. My parents were by no, not at all, they were not heavy handed, and I don't think yours were either.
Well, Dad was, but
there's discipline, but I mean, in terms of if you decided you were going to go outside and do something, you generally probably did it.
Yep, right. You're right.
And you got to go build a fort, or you and your friend would shoot off the rockets or whatever you were going to do. Nobody said, no, you can't do that. And I thought about that, and I, you know, when it talked about literature and the arts and so forth, I wanted to play an instrument, and I would say I wasn't encouraged. I had an organ I used to play. Drove my father crazy. But but I'm sure if I pushed it, they would have said, okay, fine. You know, whether it was a drum or a trumpet or something. But I was going to say, I think my brother and I kind of found our own way. And again, this wasn't a ding on my mom and dad. I know when it came time for colleges, my parents took a back seat to that. I mean, I went through and looked up the schools, perhaps, that I would think I would want to go to, see what the cost would be, is there financial aid. And I think you did the same sort of thing. I mean,
yeah.
Did your parents have a heavy hand in in your college selection? Sometimes I wish maybe they did, but maybe it was a time period. I'm not so sure we had there might have been a few kids whose parents were overly involved. I think if I was a parent now, I probably would be too involved with trying to help them with college, because I do think, you and I have said this, I do think a kid should go to the best college they can get into because of who you meet and the networking you can do later on in life. I don't think that was something that I thought about in high school when I was looking at colleges.
No, no. You know, I think your memory of your parents, and it matches with mine about a heavy hand, et cetera. I think we were given a lot of leeway as kids, a great deal of leeway. And because of it, it's Boy Scouts, hanging out with friends, like we were constantly put in situations where we had to resolve conflict if we had a fight with a friend or a kid down the road, right? How to get together, how to do things. I was always kind of a kid that was interested in making money, though. Like my sister and I had a Red Flyer wagon, and we would put on puppet shows in charge in the neighborhood. Or there's the magic kit that I got for my birthday one year, and we had magic shows in the garage, a nickel to attend.
You and Dennis the Menace. It's a dime. Come on in.
Laura once learned how to make God's eyes out of yarn.
Yeah.
Remember the two sticks and the yarn? We made a bunch and sold them around the neighborhood and guilted people into buying them around Christmas time. So, you know, I think a lot of factors enter into the poor neighbors, man. Like, you want a God's eye? Okay. How much? A dollar. All right.
Your mother, you did what? And we went and sold these guys. Okay.
Mom was like that. And then Dad would get home and say, you did what? Like, go sell more. Go sell more.
Sell for $2.
But I was struck. I think you hit something that intrigued me about this article. So the children they chose to look at over 40 years, they began in 1972 and moved forward. If they were to replicate that study today, and if they had already started about 5 or 6 years ago, the environment for child rearing and the society we live in right now is just so different than what we grew up in, that when you read things like exposing kids to this, sitting down with them, talking through their emotions, my parents did not talk through my emotional states with me. If something was up, my mother would often say to me, go to your room, close the door, and play with your Lego for a while. And even if I didn't want to do it, I did it, and suddenly, like, I would feel better, and, you know, and she laughs about that. So I think there was just this different parenting style going on, right? And now we have, like, the helicopter parents, and our building in the city, I know a lot of parents with kids, and they're in the college years, and you know, they took a very active role with their kids. Like, they applied to 10 schools. We looked at all the financial aid packages. We did. Did your parents take you to colleges?
No, I did it all on my own. We went and looked at schools on our own, drove to places. That's how I got to Marietta with Marianne and Jennifer. I had already decided I was going to go stay in Connecticut. And I think about that. There were probably four or five times in your life that you think, you had a major decision you made on your own, and had you made a different one,
Yep.
Certainly, I would not be here right now, and you probably wouldn't be either. I mean, had you gone to school out west, your life would have unfolded differently. Had I stayed
completely
in Connecticut,
yeah,
my life would have unfolded differently. I do remember, I was telling this with my mom. My dad has died a couple of years ago, and we were reminiscing over the, you know, about him over the holidays. And I do remember a time where, and my father was not by no means a violent or advocating, you know, hitting or anything. My mother certainly was not. But there was a kid that was picking on me all the time and bullying me in school. And I remember my parents picking up on it because I didn't want to go to school or whatever. And I was telling my dad about it. And I remember my dad saying to me, has he ever hit you? Has this kid hit you? And I said, well, he's pushing me and shoving me. And my father said, did you hit him back? And I said, no. And then my father said, if he ever hits you again, don't let him forget it. And my mother's, right? my mother, you can't, don't tell him to do that. And my father says, no, if he hits you, let him have it, but don't let him forget it. And he'll never bother you again. And I do remember the time. I still remember where it was at the school. It was in grade school. And I beat the shit out of the kid. I mean, you know, as little kids would do. But yeah. I remember I ripped his shirt and the buttons popped off and never bothered me again.
Yeah.
And and my mother to this day is like, well, I didn't agree with that with your father. I said, well, I said, you know, that dad's deal was if he hits you first, she said, my father always said, make sure he hits you first and make sure that, you know, if he starts something with you and he's picking on you, you know, and I do remember that. But, you know, that was one of those things where, as you said, you know, parents don't have a guidebook, right? How do you handle?
No kids come with manuals. No.
No. And so, my little nephew is struggling with a kid picking on him in school now. And it's funny to hear the parents saying the same thing. And it's his dad is saying, well, if that kid hits you, you hit him right back. And the mother, oh, no, don't tell him that. Don't tell him to do that. So, but that goes into kind of the empathizing, I guess, and or trying to talk through emotions. But it's usually kids. I still remember it, so I guess it did imprint on me. But I went through my own thinking on this and thought, you know, what were the four or five occasions in my life where things would have turned out very different? And I guess you have regrets about maybe some of them you could have changed.
Yeah.
But
I don't.
You don't have any regrets about decisions you made?
You can't. You can't have regrets about. I think.
Or is it? Or is it? Did you think about what could have been?
I think you should. I think if you have regrets at all, it's about what you didn't do, not what you did do. Like, you know, these decisions, everybody makes decisions.
I didn't do anything, Greg Gardens. I could have gone to that man, didn't want you. I could have been a model. I could have married Chad Paul Geddes.
A classic film.
Which, everything's good you didn't do.
Everything's good you didn't. I mean, because they're both, in their own ways, philosopher kings, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But you've never had a regret of, maybe regret's not the right word, of the what would have been or something. I don't know.
I puzzle about the what would have or could have, but I don't do it in the framework of regret. I do it in like one of those interesting thought experiments, like in another life,
yeah,
I could have done this or I could have done that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think about it because I certainly never would have thought you and I would be in 2025 doing a podcast. Of course, that never existed.
No.
Growing up, but I don't know. Yeah, we'll think about it. So, but that was a great article. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I was glad you found it. So, hey, thanks for joining us today on the Focus Group. We appreciate your time with us, and we have a new president this week.
Yay.
So, we'll leave it at that. You can get your politics in a lot of other places, so we try to avoid it here, although it sneaks in. Sneaks in now and then. Thanks to our friends. Thanks to our friends at Deep Discount. Be sure to learn all about them at focusgroupradio.com. You can click on the Deep Discount logo and start shopping away. There's a winter sale going on right now with four K products for sale as well. And I picked Atomic Blonde. John picked Star Trek, the motion picture.
How typical.
And the new release is The Substance. And as a bonus, we're telling you, as John says, get Team America. It could be, all you got to do is change Kim Jong-il to Kim Jong-un, and it's still relevant today.
Fresh.
With all the satire of of world politics. And thanks for spending time with us. And remember, don't text and drive, arrive alive, particularly with this sort of weather, with snow and rain and all the other types of bad weather going on the lower 48. We hope you all have a good week, and we'll see you next time here on The Focus Group.
It's The Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning focus group.